celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game, and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen, 5A, state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Brady hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Lechleitner Doors, sales and service at Lechleitner. They open all the right doors. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. Great to be with you. And coming up on our program this evening, our Sports Beat memory countdown has reached number 4. And outside of maybe one or two Notre Dame football stories, where fans had strong opinions, a.k.a. the Bob Davey era, I would say, would be front and center. But this particular memory was as hot of a story as I've been a part of. It lasted for weeks because there were so many people passionate about this particular event. Now, Eric wasn't involved in the actual event, but you could say he was a part of the following of the buildup to that particular moment. So our Sports Beat memory number 4, we're going to break it into two parts tonight. The first part will be with Eric in about 20 minutes, and then we'll do a little bit more in the next hour of the program, including a special song to help remember this particular moment. Something I put together many moons ago. And it was a lot of fun to put together, but it's safe to say out of all the opinions I have ever had on this program, this event brought more anger, emails, phone calls to me about my opinion than anything else I've ever been a part of. And to this day, I'm still right and they're wrong. I was kidding.
I would say of all the of the nastiest reactions I've ever gotten from anything I've ever written had to do with Bob Knight. And I also got some positive ones, but one guy, when my kids were little, and they're grown men now, but they were little, he wrote me and he said, I know where your kids go to school. Ugh. Listed their teachers' names, what time they got out of school.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was
nerving. Yeah. Unnerving, I should say. All right, so we'll get to that memory coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll spend actually quite a bit of time on that subject today. Like I mentioned yesterday, the top five, all five could be number one. I mean, it was impossible to rank them, but we finally made a decision and went with the five, so we'll get to number four coming up in just a little bit. Also on the program, we'll spend a little time talking about the Irish safety position. We know the starters, but how about some young guys that are coming along? We'll have rapid fire later on in the program. And looking ahead to tomorrow, National Signing Day Part 2. for the Notre Dame football team. There's not going to be any Brian Kelly press conference tomorrow. It sounds like we might get a little commentary from coaches on the one player that's going to sign. So we will spend time on that player tomorrow. And our good friend Steve Wiltfong, the national recruiting insider for 24/7 Sports, will join us 24 hours and 19 minutes from right now.
I texted him today.
And did he know that I tried to get him on the show?
I didn't know at the time he did. We were just
chit-chatting.
We're just chit-chatting. I needed a piece of information. I'm writing a story for tomorrow for the Tribune where I lead with some recruiting elements because it's odd. I called Tom Lemming today, and this is the first time I can ever remember talking to him, and I've been talking to him for decades, that he did not have either laryngitis or sore throat or both. Because normally on February signing day, he does like 100 radio shows and just one after another. And he's had plenty of time to chat on the phone today because there's not a lot going on.
Yeah, it's a little different now with two signing days, to say the least.
So boring.
Yeah,
so boring.
All right, let's get to a little quick hitters, and we'll get to some other items here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Notre Dame All-American 2001 National Champion Basketball Player Ruth Riley last night elected into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Three-time All-American at Notre Dame, won the 2001 Naismith Award. And I got to be honest, not something I follow. How in the world has it taken her 18 years to go into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame? Isn't that shocking, considering the career that she had, three-time All-American and a national champion?
Yeah, I don't understand the timing of the various halls of fame. I wouldn't think the wait would be that long on that one. I know the college football one is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it just goes on and on forever. I remember, you know, Ruth was such a unique player. And I remember I was doing something over at, it's now Purcell Pavilion, it was the Joy Center at the time. I was working on press row, and the women's basketball team came onto the floor for a practice, and it was her freshman year, and I really wasn't following recruiting that much. She wasn't a five-star recruit, but she came out, and I'm like, who's this big girl with the headband that's swatting everybody's stuff into the seats? And, you know, I just was really curious about how her career might turn out. I remember that moment saying, you just go, wow. And Kelly Seaman was, I want to say a freshman or a sophomore then too, pretty big player. But Ruth, I had never heard of, but she's an amazing person beyond her basketball. The trips she's made over to Africa, her humanity missions and so forth. Wow, I tell you, and for a long time, Darren, especially when Notre Dame football was down, I would say Ruth Riley was probably the most recognizable sports figure on Notre Dame lore for a while because of all that and football being down for a while.
Had a great WNBA career, one of the few players to win a national championship in women's college basketball and win a WNBA crown. And Ruth was on our program last Thursday as a part of Sportsbeat Memory Number 7, the 01 women's basketball team winning that first national championship. Also, Big Ten basketball tonight, two of the three conference leaders are in action. Michigan State, can you imagine practice with Izzo the last few days after they've lost two in a row, including to Indiana? Can you imagine practice? So I would like to offer my condolences to Illinois, who gets Michigan State after they've lost two in a row and a couple of practices with a very happy Tom Izzo. That game will be in Shambana tonight at 7 o'clock. Oh, gosh. He may not call off the dogs either. He may let the dogs hunt a little while in that game. Michigan also in action. They are at Rutgers for an 8 o'clock tip. Valparaiso has lost five of their last six Valley games. They're at Illinois State tonight at 8 o'clock. Notre Dame basketball returns to the forefront tomorrow night, 8 o'clock here on WSBT Radio as they take on Miami, Florida. So the Irish will try to win two in a row after beating Boston College on Saturday. Those are some of our quick hitters to kick off the program. And we spent a little time talking about covering slot receivers on yesterday's program. And Eric, you kind of morphed into some safety conversation, so I'm going to take it another step today in our opening segment. You mentioned the name Derek Allen on yesterday's program, a four-star recruit, according to 24/7 Sports, and our guy, Steve Wiltfong, national recruiting insider for 24/7 Sports, was ranked 106 nationally coming out of high school. He was number 9 at the safety position, did not play for the Fighting Irish last year, and in December, when Brian Kelly and you sat down and had a big conversation, was it in his office with the surfboard?
It was in his office with the surfboard.
How cool. I mean, you probably just wanted to grab it, didn't you, and just take off with it.
You know, I've never been on a surfboard. That probably doesn't surprise a lot of people, but
you've got the glasses for it.
I do. I've been on a boogie board, but not a surfboard.
You've been on a boogie board?
Yep.
How did that go? Did the boogie board win or did you?
I think I won.
Did you? Good for you.
Yeah. We used to go to Myrtle Beach all through my childhood and stuff. This is when I could get on a boogie board.
So the boogie board would win today?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it would hit me over the head.
But anyway, you asked Brian Kelly back in December about Allen, and was he going to stick at the safety position? Because you thought there could be maybe a position change in his future?
I did. I was hearing whispers of that, so I wanted to get him on the record.
What position were they whispering?
Rover and linebacker.
Okay, fair enough. So here is Al Bryan answered that question that you had about the future of Derek Allen, and would it be at the safety position?
He'll have a lot to say with how his January goes.
Okay.
He'll, you know, a lot of these young players that you didn't see this year will get to meet Mr. Bayless up close and personal.
Right.
In January. So a lot of those decisions will kind of, you know, take place over the next couple of months.
Okay, get out your detective hat. What do you think that all meant?
Derek Allen was 6'2", 213 when he came in last fall.
Okay.
Big safety to begin with. And the decoding there, I think, is that they would like Derek Allen optimally to remain a safety. But if he is, he needs to be, he can stay at 6'2". They're happy with that. But he needs to get under 210, maybe 207, 208. Be a really leaner version of himself and be ready to climb the depth chart. You know, he redshirted this year and not, he redshirted by the old redshirt standards. He didn't play in a game. And he was a guy that had a lot of acclaim coming out of Georgia, coming out of high school in Georgia. So, and if he doesn't, I mean, it's not the end of the world. He can certainly beef up and be a player that's right, a Rover or a linebacker, but I think the when you start to look at the talents that's being compiled at those two safety positions, it would be pretty nice to keep him at safety.
Which segues us right into 2019 signee Kyle Hamilton. According to our guy Wiltfong, 24/7 Sports, another four-star coming out of high school. But this young man,
he just got elevated to a five.
They have not changed that on their website.
The composite shows him as a four, but 247's individual rating has him as a five. Number 15 player in the country.
I'll have Steve change that so I don't get fooled again.
Okay.
All right, so a five-star according to 24/7 Sports, and they had him ranked nationally as the 60th best player in the class of 2019. So his arrival maybe makes Allen's meeting with Mr. Bayless more important?
I think so, although I think Kyle will play free safety and Allen will play strong safety.
Okay.
But I still think it's important because when you look at strong safety, unless you're going to put Houston Griffith in that mix, you know, then you go from Jalen Elliott to Litchfield Ajavan, the other freshman. Now, Litchfield is an amazing story. Came from Ghana with his grandpa, and really had to battle some economic conditions. Mm. You know, it was really difficult, but really driven kid. There's a lot of disparity between the two recruiting services on how good this kid is, whether he's a four-star or a three-star. 5'11", 185. But you look at the other safety position, Devin Studd, still around. Some people expect him to maybe look around a little bit. Paul Mawalla was a revelation last year, the kid out of Penn.
Sure.
6'2", 212. You know, he was not ranked very high and really got the coaching staff's trust, and then Kyle Hamilton. So you look at them and you throw Houston Griffith in there and you say, what's the opposite of beef? Where's the filler on this roster? There isn't.
There's stuffing?
Yeah, there's eight really good safety prospects. It's amazing, again, how quickly that and dramatically that position has transformed.
And that's got to help special teams to have those type of players. Absolutely. In the depth. There's no reason why that should not get better.
Well, I mean, Terry Joseph gets a lot of credit here. Clark Lee gets a lot of credit. Even Mike Elko, because when he took the job, I mean, on day one, he was sifting through film and saying, we've got to get better safeties in here that fit our system better. And the offers were going out. And you've seen a lot of players move positions, leave the program. And I'll tell you, the turning point really was Alohi Gilman transferring to Notre Dame. I mean, without that, you know, you would have Jalen Elliott and Devin Studstill, I guess, starting.
Maybe the real turning point is when Van Gorder was let go, because his analysis of the safety position really hurt this program.
It absolutely did. And without giving away trade secrets, I believe Mike Elko was of that opinion as well.
Well, the number of offers that were made soon after,
yeah,
I think we can connect the dots. I think that's a very fair thing to say. You know, Ajavan, you mentioned from Ghana, he's a 4-star according to 24/7.
Yeah.
But does he fall into the category of more of a project? And I hate to say that of a 4-star, because that's not really fair to say, but where we are with the safety position, does he have some room to grow coming out of high school?
I think he's a shorter safety. He's, you know, the same height as Alohi, 5'11". Everybody else is 6 foot or better. And he's 185, so he's the lightest. I mean, he's a guy they would like to bring along deliberately,
sure,
thinking that he's going to blossom, kind of like Jalen Elliott did in his later years. If you take Derek Allen out of that mix, and if you play Houston Griffith at nickel full time, then there's maybe a little bit more urgency for Litchfield to move it up. But if those things happen, I really think all of a sudden that position looks so good. I mean, it really, you just go, whoa, that's a lot of talent and a lot of depth at a position that was just, they were looking for anybody a couple years ago to play.
Better or less than a 50% chance that eventually you would see a safety starting combination of Allen and Hamilton at some point down the line? Better than 50%, less than 50%.
If Allen doesn't grow out of being a safety either, okay, because he could continue to grow and not be his fault. He could be as lean as possible, and he could still grow. But let's say that he doesn't. Yeah, absolutely.
But
Allen and Hamilton, or Houston Griffith and Hamilton.
But is there a part of you that says it would be better for Notre Dame if Allen actually outgrew the safety position?
I don't know, because right now, Darren, when you look at Rover, you feel pretty good about Shane Simon there, especially if Asmar Bilal is going to move inside.
Well, to be fair, we have to see it.
Right, we have to see it.
But the assumption is.
Yeah. And then at the linebackers, you have all these young guys competing with Jonathan Jones, who's been around a while. And they're throwing a lot of numbers at the linebacker position. So would he get lost in those numbers? Would he really surface? You would think it would be a while for him to adjust to that linebacker position. So are you going to spend a whole nother year of him kind of incubating? So you've lost 2 years of his eligibility. I'd like to see him stay at safety.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some safety conversation on this Tuesday. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, as we mentioned earlier, we're going to spend a little bit more time than normal on our Sports Beat memory number 4 today. A little bit this hour, a little bit next hour. We want to get Eric's take on this memory, and we'll do that coming up next as Sports Beat continues. It is now 26 minutes after the top of the hour at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
For in-depth coverage of players, coaches, and exclusive videos not seen anyplace else, check out ndinsider.com. Available on desktop, tablet, and smartphone. ND Insider, ultimate Notre Dame sports coverage.
I'm Darren Pritchett. He's Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Sports Beat continues on this Tuesday evening, brought to you by Budweiser and Leckleitner Doors Sales and Service, halfway through this hour. And we are going to start early with our Sports Beat memory tonight. We're celebrating 25 years of weekday Sports Beat being on WSBT Radio. The program started January 10th, 1994. So we have been counting down some of our favorite memories, the top 25 that have occurred since Sports Beat has been on the air. And throughout the countdown, we have tried to keep it more local than not. But with a huge portion of this memory's fan base being right here, this is really the one exception. And it was a story that we went with on Sports Beat for weeks. And the phones never stopped ringing. The emails never stopped coming in because everybody had an opinion. And it all centers around March 14th, 2000. That was the day Indiana University fired legendary basketball coach Bob Knight. The firing stemmed from a CNN Sports Illustrated piece showing Knight back in 1997 wrapping his hands around player Neil Reed during a practice, allegedly choking him, as some thought. I'll let everybody decide on their own what the video showed. Knight coached 29 years at Indiana, winning 662 games, three national championships, 1976, 1981, and 1987. Why did I get so many phone calls and emails? Because I thought Indiana did the right thing by canning this guy. He deserved it after watching that video. I've always said he is the greatest basketball coach I have ever seen. From an X's and O's standpoint, you can't beat him. Eric, he has done so much charitable work that a lot of people don't know about, and it's tied into Notre Dame at times. There's so many great things about this guy, but just every once in a while, Eric, he'd do something that would put himself in an awkward light. And to me, this was the ultimate moment. And when you put your hands around your player's throat, that's the end of the line for me. What was your reaction as a former member of the media that covered Bob Knight for how many years?
From 84 season through 96, so 13 years.
Oh, the stories. We'll get to a few in a moment.
Yeah.
As someone that covered him and knew him very well and interviewed him one-on-one,
right,
what was your reaction to Indiana firing him?
Well, I had a chance to relive it real recently. I was fortunate enough to be involved in a panel discussion over at Notre Dame, and they showed the 30 for 30, the last days of Knight. And so I got to kind of relive everything, and it was really emotional for me to see it because it was such a big part of my
sure
career, my life. It feels like a different lifetime ago. It's really the Big Ten years and the Notre Dame years. And
it was almost like having a college class, learning how to be a journalist with Bob Knight.
Yeah. But when I kind of relived that, I definitely thought that they did the right thing there. And it's unfortunate because Bob Knight at the end was his own worst enemy. The thing that was fascinating to me, Darren, was he reinvented himself from an X's and O's standpoint right before my eyes. You know, in 85, Indiana was falling off the map. They were an NIT team. He was having a difficult time dealing with both the three-point line, defending it and using it on offense, and the shot clock. those were things that didn't work in his favor, and he kind of reinvented himself again when he started getting out of the Ohio, Indiana, Illinois belt with recruiting, getting junior college kids in. And I thought, I wonder if he's ever going to be able to be successful, if he thinks he can be successful without all the, the drama, I guess, sure, for lack of a better word. And he just never did, and it seemed to get worse late. Now, again, my last season covering him was 96, so that was the season before he had the incident with Neil Reed, but it wasn't discovered till about 3 years later. Sure. And I remember at the panel discussion sharing this, when the video finally came out of that, there were people that said, it corroborated to them that Knight didn't choke him, and there were a lot of other people that thought he did. So my kids were like 8 and 10 at the time, and we were watching it on TV. I go, what do you guys think about it? And they go, I think he should be in jail. That was they didn't know who he was, what my relationship to him. It was just, this is a coach, this is what he did to the player, what do you think? So I thought that was an interesting perspective, but
a different perspective, Eric. I remember taking phone calls on the air and emails, not just one person, numerous former military people that were Indiana fans that thought there was nothing wrong with what Knight did, because that's something that they dealt with in their former lives, being dealt with in that manner.
Correct. And there were people that, again, when I was watching this Last Days of Knight, and I would recommend anybody watch it that really wants to see an interesting story, there are people, that were outraged that he got fired and wanted, the president of the university was burnt in effigy, and, there were people that were threatened. Murray Sperber, who had spoken out against Knight, got death threats, and so he was a very polarizing figure. And again, during my career of covering him, the reaction of people positively and negatively to Bob Knight was so sharp either way. The one thing that I kind of became convinced after covering him for a few years, that the people that really didn't appreciate Knight and the people that really loved him no matter what he did weren't going to move off those spots. They were going to stay there. So my job was to just show them what was happening, and then they could kind of decide for themselves rather than trying to pull one side to the other side or vice versa. I do think there were times that, Bob Knight wasn't static. He changed a lot over time. When he started dating his second wife, he really did mellow. It was to the point where I thought he was kind of get over the hump with all the drama. But then it kind of got dark again. And so it was just an interesting time.
Well, you wonder what we don't know about.
When this
happened, there were reports about things that maybe were thrown in the secretary's office. Who knows what else happened, but let's stay away from that. But let me ask you this question. Since you sat down across from him and did one-on-one interviews with him.
Mm-hmm. Not many.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I would like to know this. We know who Bob Knight is in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he would put on a little show. Like in the NCAA tournament with the whip, that was, he had a little fun there, even though there were a lot of people upset with what that could mean.
Right.
But he could put on a little show for the media. When you were just sitting across from him, was he a totally different person? Or would he have that same rough attitude where if he didn't like the question, he would try to make his point forcefully?
Well, the thing is, I knew what his hot buttons were from just being around him. He didn't like, for example, the term point guard. If you said your point guard there was going to be problems. And he didn't like questions where you kind of, you've seen them in the Brian Kelly conferences where it's not even really a question. Somebody just kind of gives their opinion and expects Brian to kind of go, that didn't float with Knight. Because then he would pick apart. I told you the percentage ones
that's
he didn't like.
That's the best
like.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think he respected me enough where, you know, I wasn't worried that I was going to step on a landmine. You know, to get these one-on-one interviews, it was really difficult. The first one that I did, I mean, I mailed a letter to him in the summertime, and I didn't get the one-on-one interview until November. And when I showed up for the interview, we had had a terrible snowstorm up here, and what normally is about close to 4-hour drive took me about 8 hours to get there. But I had left early so that I wasn't late. And I remember the basketball SID at the time, Greg Elkin, sees me walk into the arena and says, you know what, I don't think this is a good day for this interview. He's not in a good mood. And I about exploded. I almost threw it a chair. And I said, are you kidding me? And Knight sees me out of his corner of his eye, and he comes over, and this is how he could be. He could be very charming.
Sure.
Comes up, puts his arm around, and goes, what Pulitzer Prize winner are we working on today? And so
I love it.
We went over and we sat down, and then I think I've told this on the air before. Brian Evans, who was a really good shooter on their team, came out for some extra shooting practice.
A lefty.
And Knight is heckling him during our entire interview. Every word that he's saying to me does not include swear words. Every word he's saying to Evans just about is a swear word. So it's really interesting when you go back and listen to the tape how careful he was at being able to go back and forth with that. But, you know, I always felt like he treated me fair and treated me with respectfully, but we weren't really ever close. And I'll share one conversation in the top five in the My Five thing that was probably the most interesting conversation we ever had, just he and I. But I always was trying to understand him. I always tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. And yet sometimes he just, and toward the end, he just kind of made that really difficult. The whole thing, And I mean, I don't know. It's I don't want to go on and on with media stories here, but the 92 run to the Final Four was so bizarre, and that was where the whip came in, and a lot of other things came in. But basically, what happened that year was they were going to win the Big Ten championship and be the number one seed in the Midwest, which I think was Indianapolis. They lost to Purdue at Purdue to a kind of average Purdue team on the last day of the season. And they get sent to Boise, where they're a number two seed, and they have to play Shaq and LSU in the second round out there. But Knight cancels this banquet that they had every year. And then it kind of got out. The people that sponsored the banquet, and I guess a lot of the money went to charity and stuff, were upset about it because they had sold tickets and all this. And then instead of Knight just kind of letting it go, decides to say that the players hated the banquet and the food wasn't very good and all this stuff. And then he kind of played the misunderstood role when we got out to Boise, and it was a crazy ride all the way to the Final Four, including when he wouldn't talk to Krzyzewski after the semifinal game. It was just
silly.
Those are where you just kind of like, Bob, you need a timeout.
Yeah.
You know, it was disappointing because there is goodness in Bob Knight. And I don't mean just from a basketball standpoint, but he let this darkness kind of sully what I think he could have been. And it ended up being his undoing, unfortunately for him.
Almost like Anakin Skywalker. Became Darth Vader.
You know? I'm not sure that's the analogy that I would use, but I can't say that's a bad one.
We're going through our sports beat memory a little early tonight since Eric used to cover Bob Knight. The firing of Bob Knight is Sports Beat memory number 4 tonight. And it's brought to you by Lozier, a great place to work, matching 401k contributions, DPM events. Visit dpmevents.com to get everything you need to make a successful corporate event. Funny thing was, years ago, we were just having a conversation about Knight. And, of course, growing up in Illinois, being an Illinois fan, I started saying, yeah, I remember that game at the Assembly Hall in Champaign. Indiana was ahead. The ball, I think, goes out of bounds with like 5 seconds left. And I'll never forget Knight ran off the floor waving at the Illinois fans. And that was the game that the Illinois head coach Lou Henson called him a classic bully. And they almost got into a fight. And as I'm telling the story, of course, you go, I was there.
Yeah.
And that was just a bizarre moment. That was a time Bob was irritated. He wasn't able to get some of the Illinois players he used to. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of friction between the two coaching staffs at that time. That was my feeling from the outside looking in. But that was just one of those classic Bob Knight days where he had his way of sticking it to people.
And you know what was funny was I can remember talking to another writer before the game. And Bob had been behaving himself. That was the funny thing. And we were kind of talking about that. But this is weird. We've gone a long time without a blow up. And then we got a pretty good one that day.
Classic bully.
Classic bully.
That was a pretty good line.
That was.
I don't give Lou a lot of credit for many things, but that was pretty good on his part.
I remember it vividly.
Oh, gosh. And I can remember the reaction of the fans when he ran off the floor. As any fan base should be upset. I mean, waving at the fans. Did you see it happen?
I did, Darren. I mean.
And that made the old Nick Anderson 1989 swisher at the buzzer at the Assembly Hall pretty sweet for the fans who root for the old orange and blue. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll kind of keep this going with our My Five since you covered Mr. Knight. And we are just going to simply do the top 5 memories of covering Bob Knight. And again, that's from 84 through 96.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff. You're known for your honorable mention. Your honorable mention could take probably an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the honorable mention out and limit it to 5.
All right, we'll do that coming up next on WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
We've been talking with Eric about our Sports Beat memory number 4 tonight, the firing of Bob Knight. So we've worked it into the My 5 Question of the Day. I think Eric's had fun putting together this list, trying to figure out what's on the list. Simply this, from 84 to 96, covering Bob Knight, Eric's top 5 memories of Bob Knight at Indiana. We will start with number 5.
It's funny because none of these actually have to do with the game itself. So number 5, we're in Tucson, Arizona at an NCAA tournament, and we're at a press conference, and Knight calls out this guy. He goes, "Who's so-and-so?" The guy raises his hand, and he starts laying into this guy about this column that he had written. And over in, toward the back of the room, you hear the door open just a little bit, and you hear this, "Boo!" And Knight looks up, and the door closes. And then he starts laying into this guy again, and you hear this, "Boo!" And Knight's fuming at this point. Who the hell could it be? And the person kind of pokes his face in, and Knight sees who it is, and he goes, "Oh, is that old fat rear end?" So then he comes in. It's Don Haskins, who was UTEP's coach and a really good friend of Bob's, and they were also at the Tucson site. So that guy kind of that was getting yelled at kind of got off the hook because then Knight started telling Haskins stories, and they were wonderful.
I have never heard that one. That's fantastic. Number 4. How's that number 5? What could top that? Number 4.
Number 4 was during that 92 run after the banquet got canceled. They're playing LSU in the second round up there. And Shaq was in yellow and looked like a school bus. And Indiana ended up beating them. Matt Nover guarded Shaq in that game. They ended up beating them. But both the pregame and the postgame press conferences were so bizarre because you had Dale Brown, who normally was bizarre, And you had Bob Knight, who was trying to be at his bizarre best. You know, people were asking him how he prepared to beat Shaq, and he called it cerebral reversal. That was this thinking process that he had all his players stick their feet in ice water overnight while he stood over them, and that was how they won the game. But Dale Brown was just as bizarre, and he wasn't trying to be bizarre on purpose. He just was.
And how odd Matt Nover ended up being in the movie Blue Chips with Shaq. Remember the movie about the cheating in college basketball? Nover was one of the big recruits, along with Shaq and Penny Hardaway.
Right, and then the whip was the next round in Albuquerque, where a guy from Indiana, there was an Albuquerque radio station, had a cheer toss contest, and a guy from Indiana won.
Of course. Going through the top five Bob Knight memories from Eric covering him from 84 to 96, number three.
There was a point where Bob Hamill retired at the Bloomington Herald Times, and I can't tell you what year it was. And I declined that job. I had interviewed for it, and I decided that I didn't want it. So I'm at my house. And
good for your health.
And the phone that we used for our computer modem back when there was dial-up rings, and it's Bob Knight on it. My youngest son picked up the phone. He goes, "Some guy named Bob Knight is on the phone." So I thought it was one of my friends goofing around. And it was him. And he goes, "So why didn't you take the Bloomington job?" So we had an interesting conversation. And I'll tell you what, he was quite charming in the conversation. But in the end, he thought I made the right move when I told him what my reasons were.
Very interesting. All right, we move along in our countdown of Bob Knight moments. We are up to number two.
So we're at a Purdue game in at Mackey Arena in West Lafayette, and Purdue had beaten Indiana. And with Bob Knight, you never really knew when he was going to show up or if he was going to show up at a press conference.
I'm tired of losing to Purdue!
So the Purdue Sports Information Director, they're kind of waiting on him to come in. And there were Purdue players that were going to follow him and then Gene Cady. And he goes, "You know what, Woody Austin, why don't you come on up, and if Coach Knight comes in, you step aside, and he'll do his press conference." So Woody Austin gets up there, and all of a sudden Knight comes in. He sees Woody at the thing, and Jim Vrujink, this SID, goes, "Come on, Coach." And Knight storms out. He gets on the bus, and his sports information director, Greg Elkin, gets on the bus with him. And Knight's reaming him on the bus. He goes, "That should have never happened. Blah, blah, blah. You go in there and you tell them why I didn't speak." So as soon as Elkin gets off the bus and goes inside Mackey Arena, he tells the bus driver to drive. So he leaves there in West Lafayette.
And I assume he got back via...
I don't know how he got back. I think one of the Purdue's SIDs drove him back.
My goodness. And we have reached number one. The first four were fantastic, but your ultimate Bob Knight memory from 84 to 96.
This is kind of a two-parter. Obviously, the chair toss, which I thought was going to be the end of Knight. Not because the chair was enough to do it. I just didn't think he was going to stop there. And then later in the season, they played Marquette in the NIT. And Marquette was a proud program. I mean, they were, with Al McGuire, they were big-time national championship. And they were kind of going through the same thing. Rick Majerus was their coach. They played a multiple overtime game against Indiana. Indiana wins. But when Marquette came into the building, this is how bold they were. The cheerleaders in Assembly Hall were doing the motions. They were going, "Throw a chair, Bobby, throw a chair." No. And their fans were doing it. It was incredible. But I'll tell you what, to this day, it's the most meaningless game, the best meaningless game I ever covered. Because these two programs, it was like they were clawing to get back into relevance. And Indiana, they both actually found their way back. Indiana more than Marquette at times. But Indiana won a national championship 2 years later. Mm.
Some great memories right there. Holy cow. I can't imagine what didn't make the list. We'll take a quick timeout. Sportsbeat continues next on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
We'll all have a Notre Dame football, mostly recruiting notebook. Has some other items, too. We'll have the Notre Dame-Miami men's basketball advance. Michigan State's playing the Fighting Illini today. We'll have that and girls' basketball sectional pairings and regional pairings and much, much more.
We'll see how the old Spartans react after a couple of rough practices after losing two in a row. I think they'll be okay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for those stories. Unbelievable. There's more stories we just don't have time for. Top of the hour, WS.
On the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Luke Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tyne.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now, in front, Ogilvy, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Another hour of Sports Beat ready to go, presented by Budweiser and Lechleitner Doors Sales and Service. Sean and Darren with you from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. A lot of fun last hour, starting our Sports Beat memory series tonight, with number four being the firing of Bob Knight, Eric being a big part of that from 84 to 96, covering Bob Knight through the chair toss, through Ted Valentine. Those are some good times.
All kinds of stuff. I caught, I think, a pretty high percentage of that conversation over the last half hour of the first hour. I mean, man, why hasn't Eric written a book about that, all that stuff? That's what I want to know. That's gold.
I think he'd have to go hide from Bob.
I mean,
he'd become Bartman.
There you go.
He would have to change his name, identity. Cannot tell anyone where I am and what my name is anymore, because Bob would not be very happy. He was a part of the Johnny Bench feature on MLB Network. They just came out with a documentary on Bench. It's an hour long. Haven't watched it yet, but I saw the preview, and the preview was a minute and a half long. They had various people talking about Bench, and Bob was one of them. Hmm. And all of a sudden, he looks really, really old. He has really, really changed from the last time I remember seeing him.
I don't think I've seen, it's been a couple of years at least since I've seen him do anything. How long has it been now since he was on ESPN? It's been several years now at this point, hasn't it? Let me use the Google machine.
It's got to be 6 or 7 years since he was doing those Big 12 games. I mean, he's 78 now. Unbelievable. Mm. Of course, wrapped up his coaching tenure at Indiana in 2000, was at Texas Tech from 2001 to 2008. Really a shame, a guy that should be in the 1,000 Victory Club.
It's only been 4 years since 2015, since he was at ESPN.
And Bob did some games together, I think, for that Big 12 matchup on Big Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of times Bob didn't do a lot of homework for those.
He's Bob Knight.
At times. It was a little awkward, but I mean, the analysis was absolutely terrific. So we'll continue on with those memories coming up. We've got rapid fire on the way and a little bit more on the Bob Knight side on a song that I put together back in 2000.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear this.
To commemorate.
Did you sing in this song?
I did not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It was the vocals of Morris Albert.
All right.
Do you know who that is?
I do not.
I did not know the name of the artist, but I had a song in mind when I wanted to put this together. And I knew the song, had no idea the year, the artist, anything. But it seems to work pretty well.
All right.
I think.
All right.
That's just my opinion. You may say, God, that's awful. But I thought it was the perfect lyrics for Bob Knight.
Okay.
All right, we're trying to get a hold of Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold. Haven't been able to catch him as of yet, so we'll keep trying here over the next little bit, 11 minutes after the top of the hour. You know, I do want to apologize to all of the little boys and little girls who have been born since October 1st in Boston, that they only have two championships.
They've suffered so much.
To celebrate. Somebody wrote that these kids have two championships in however many days with the Red Sox and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you are a Jet, Mets, and Knicks fan, for the last 40 years, you have nothing.
That's true.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, the Mets won in 86.
You have to go back to Super Bowl III, right?
Yeah, the Mets.
Oh, the Mets. Mets 86,
Mets in 86.
Yeah.
I mean, the Knicks haven't won since Walt Frazier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets were Super Bowl III, so that's around 1969, 1970. So if you are the combination Jets, Knicks, and Mets, you got nothing.
Yeah.
You got nothing in your lifetime, possibly.
Yep.
Holy cow. That's brutal. Mm. Especially in a major market. Major market teams are supposed to have the advantage in a lot of sports, but the Knicks have been a disaster ever since, I was going to say the John Starks era, but let's go with the Patrick Ewing era. All I remember is Starks just being that annoying guy that the Bulls would go up against. The Jets had a couple of runs. I mean, they had
AFC Championship game 2 years in a row with the Sanchez, or the butt fumble, as he's probably right. Better known now.
Sanchez. And then there was 1999 or 98. I guess it would have been 99, AFC Championship game. Denver was trying to go back-to-back Super Bowl titles. They had Denver down 10-0 at halftime mm-hmm. at Mile High, and then it didn't work out. Vinny Testaverde and Bill Parcells in charge of the Jets at that particular time. So, yeah, those franchises have struggled. The Mets, amazing in 86 with all that talent. I remember the Cardinals won the East in 87. Then the Mets came storming back in 88 but got upset by Gibson and the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series.
Right.
And you know, the Mets had that run in 2000, lost to the Yankees in the Subway Series. I mean, they've had some near misses, but
I guess if you're a Mets fan, and that's how most people tend to lie, Mets, Jets, and then Yankees and
Giants,
and Knicks or whatever. But I mean, yeah, the Yankees have managed to offset all that other futility. I'm not feeling too sorry. And the Giants, too, for that matter. So I'm not feeling sorry for New York by any means.
Well, as a hockey fan, I remember for so many years in the Stanley Cup playoffs, when the Rangers would play an opponent in the opponent's building, the chant would be nonstop. 1940. Ninth, and that's the last time the Rangers had won the Stanley Cup until they won it with Mark Messier in 1994. Mm. So that was a big moment in New York sports history. The drought of 54 years ended with Messier and the Rangers finally winning the Stanley Cup. But they have not really been the same. I mean, they had a run against the Kings a few years ago, made it to the finals with Lundqvist, but they have not been an overly dominant team. So it's just really interesting. Some of these major market teams, you would think, would have a quote-unquote advantage. Really hasn't been the case in New York. I mean, the Yankees just have so much more money than everybody else. I mean, look at the team they built in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
It's just remarkable. Their lineup just looks terrific from 1 to 25, and I just find it even more comical that Aaron Judge of the Yankees was talking to TMZ, of all things. They were talking baseball. Yeah, outfielder Bryce Harper, of course, still a free agent, hasn't signed. Judge told TMZ, quote, "Wherever he wants to play, we'll make it work. Anytime you can add an MVP to a team, it's going to make it better," end quote. If the Yankees sign Harper, there should not be anyone in America upset. I'm going to throw you with that comment, right?
Well, I mean, at this point,
well,
how can you be? Spring training's about to start. He's got to sign somewhere. If no one else is going to kick out the money to sign him, I don't blame the Yankees for trying, and I wouldn't blame him for signing with the Yankees.
All of these owners, or maybe more so fans, that get so upset when the major market teams gobble up all the talent.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that. They've got the money. Let's evaluate where we stand in the 19 offseason. The New York Yankees are not interested in a big spending ticket. That opens the door for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Then you factor in the Red Sox are not interested.
Right.
The Cubs reportedly can't go for that big guy like Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. The Dodgers are out. All of the big spenders are out. So for all these secondary teams that cry bloody murder when all these big market teams steal all the big talent, there are two 26-year-old star players that have been sitting in free agency all offseason. We're now, what, 8 days away from the start of spring training. They can never complain again.
Well, but at the same time now, the White Sox, big market, but not the same as
nobody
the Cubs.
Nobody wants to play there.
Well, I know, I but supposedly that, but they've offered the money. So I guess, yeah, if you're going to differentiate because it's the White Sox and not the Cubs.
If they truly offer Machado 7 for $175 and he said no, then he doesn't want to play there, right?
Exactly.
But, hey, I'll use my team as an example. The Cardinal ownership has been saying for years that we need that face of the franchise. We have not had that since Albert Pujols.
Mm-hmm.
We need that star player. That's what they said last offseason. Well, what do we have here? You don't have a right fielder you can count on. You need a left-handed bat, and you need a face of the franchise. Bryce Harper, he's left-handed.
Someone seems to fit that
plays
description.
Plays right field, and he's the face of the franchise. And they have not even talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Save it next year.
Yeah.
Don't throw that spiel at us. Don't say, oh, we've got money to spend. We're looking for that face of the franchise. Well, it's kind of fallen into your lap now.
Well, and it's also the thing that I don't like about the whole idea of the luxury tax, because these teams pocket that money rather than putting it back into salaries more times than not, and they continue with this trend of trying to lose for higher draft picks rather than going out and try to be competitive with whatever they have on a year-to-year basis.
Middle America baseball can never complain again, because you got two all-stars, two possible Hall of Famers sitting there, and no one is bidding on them when all the big boys are out. So don't use that as a cover for anymore. You can't use that. You're done with that. You've had your chance this year. So don't ever throw that at the fan base again. We're a little smarter than that.
Yep.
All right, we got to take a break since we're a little behind. We've got Brian Driscoll on the line, so let me take care of this quick little two-minute break. We'll bring Brian aboard. We'll talk a little football next here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser and Lechleitner. Doors sales and service continues on WSBT Radio, 20 minutes after the top of the hour on Tuesdays. We give a call to Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. He joins us for a little football conversation here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Brian, it's Darren. Good to be with you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, especially now that I know the Reds have a chance to sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. They're a Midwestern team. I'm fired up, baby.
Hey, I tell you what, it's there for the taking right now. I mean, look what the Reds are doing. They're not trying to lose anymore. I give them credit. Try to win games. Why not?
If you give me Manny Machado, I'll literally try a backflip. I may break my neck doing it, but I will try a backflip.
We have that on record. We have that on tape. So
I'll let you do it into a swimming pool. How about that?
There you go.
Unfrozen, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfrozen, that's for sure. Brian, I brought this up on the program yesterday, so let me just throw this at you and get your reaction. Yesterday's program, we talked a little bit about the Super Bowl and the way Julian Edelman impacted that game for the New England Patriots coming out of the slot. We talked about this from two different angles. Number one, how important it is to have a guy that can cover the slot. And number two, to have a difference maker in the slot position. I want to look at it from an offensive standpoint and from a Notre Dame perspective. You think about it, times, for example, Clemson put Ross in the slot, and he could do a lot of damage with his athleticism and speed. Chris Finke is a very solid, dependable football player in the slot for Notre Dame. As we look into the future, is there a guy on the roster that you could see that they could put into the slot that could really possibly change the way defenses look at the Irish offense?
Well, I think a guy that's on the team right now, beyond what Chris Sink did, and we saw in the first half against USC how impactful that slot guy can be in this offense, I think Lawrence Keyes is a guy that I look at. And the thing I like about Lawrence Keyes, to be an effective slot receiver, you have to be a great route runner. And we saw that from Chris Sink, but you definitely saw it in the Super Bowl. I mean, just his ability to use routes and technique and leverage and stemming and all the different tricks that a receiver has at his disposal to get a guy going one way when he wants to go the other way is really just what separates good route runners from great players. And that's what we saw from Julian Edelman. And Lawrence Keyes is a guy that was a good route runner in high school, advanced for his age. He's got the quickness. He's got the understanding of how to work himself open at the prep level. If he can then develop that in college, he's a guy that I think has a chance to become an outstanding slot player. And most importantly, as a high school player, again, we haven't seen him in college, but as a high school player, he caught the ball really well. And that's the other big thing is if you have a slot guy that can get open, but he's not reliable catching the ball, you don't want to throw to him because quarterbacks don't like throwing the ball over the middle if it's not to a really dependable pass catcher, because a drop or a tip pass over the middle, more often than not, results in an interception.
Brian, I'm interested because when you, or we for that matter, watch a Notre Dame game we're covering, any game that we're covering, we're looking at it in a certain way, looking for certain things. Now that Notre Dame season has been over for the last month or so, you've been watching some football sort of more casually, I guess. How do you watch a game that you're not covering compared to a game that you are covering? Are you looking at it the same or is it completely different?
Well, it's the same because when I'm covering games, I look at it like I did as a coach. And that's what I'm fortunate as an analyst, not a reporter, that my job is to analyze the game. And so I watch it like I did when I coached. You know, I watch the back end. I watch how routes develop. I watch, you know, hey, if the defense is doing this, they need to come back and do this and those kind of things. And so I've tried to watch games as a fan. And I can't. It's just, you know, I looked at it, you know, because I played quarterback and I coached for 7 years. And it's just kind of like, I just have a way that I watch games. And that's kind of why I don't love watching games on TV if I don't have a vested interest in it, because I get so frustrated because I'm like, why aren't the safeties in the screen? But no, I mean, I look at it like that. It's really hard for me to just sit back and relax and just watch a football game.
So if you were Tony Romo, you could have been calling out the same things a couple of weeks ago, right?
Not like Tony Romo. I remember in my first year covering Notre Dame for a previous site that I worked for, I was recording the game, actually. This is back when they let me video the game. And it was the Dane Chris touchdown pass. I think it was against Michigan where he rolled out to the right and threw a go route. I'd seen that route develop before, and I said, boy, if they throw a go route on that next time they run that, it's going to be a touchdown. And when he snapped the ball, I saw the safety come down, and I yelled, touchdown, and then they threw a touchdown. Well, I didn't know that that audio was on the clip when I put it out. And so I got a little bit of love for that one. But, I try to be that. I try to anticipate what they're going to do, but I don't do quite as much of that during the game. I try to sit back and be a little bit more analytical because I don't have to talk. But right. I think any good color guy needs to be able to do those things, and that's what makes Tony Romo. For someone like me, that's why I loved Mike Mayock when he was doing color for Notre Dame.
Agreed.
He could speak on the level where it's like, you know, you're actually learning the game. And that's what a fan should want to do, right? You should want to learn more about the game. And that's what I think a guy like Tony Romo does. That's what I think made Mike Mayock so good at what he did.
No question. No question.
Yep.
Love Mayock. Hated to see when he moved aside. Brian Driscoll, blueandgold.com, our guest on WSBT Radio. Since we have gone to two national signing days, a lot of excitement in December. Now the February signing day lacks some of that pizzazz. And it looks like Brian, Notre Dame will sign one player tomorrow. Isaiah Foskey will make his announcement tomorrow. And it looks like he'll be a one-member group in part two of the recruiting class. Two-part question. Number one, do you expect Foskey to pick Notre Dame? And what type of player do you believe the Irish are getting?
I'm about as certain as I can be that Isaiah Foskey is going to pick Notre Dame tomorrow. And I think it'll all come clear tomorrow. But I think what they're getting is a guy that is really an ideal player for that drop position. We saw this year with Julian Aguara, when you have a very long guy in that drop position, it's really advantageous. And what I think he brings to the table is He can rush off the edge. He's a powerful run defender. He played against elite competition in high school, but he's also a really good tight end. And actually, when he was first coming up as a recruit, most schools were recruiting him as a tight end, and he has those ball skills, and he understands the pass game, that he can kind of bring a Daylon Hayes level, potentially a Daylon Hayes level coverage into the boundary that Julian Aguara doesn't necessarily bring. So I think he's kind of that hybrid between Daylon Hayes and Julian Aguara, where he brings the edge speed and the length that Julian Aguara brings, but he's got that run power and the range and coverage that Daylon Hayes brings, and that's why Notre Dame made him such a priority in this recruiting cycle.
What do you think about the commitment they got last week from the kid from Germany, the 2020 cycle, Alex Ahrensberger? Have you been able to watch some film on him?
I mean, there's not a lot available, but what I see I really like. I mean, there's a couple things you can't teach, right? You can't teach 6'6", great frame. I mean, you either have it or you don't. And he's the guy with a really outstanding frame. I love his motor. But the other thing you can't teach is you can't teach that the instincts of how to play football. And we've seen it, you know, I remember Steve Feiler, right? You guys remember Steve Feiler?
Sure.
About as freaky of an athlete as Notre Dame has had at linebacker by anyone not named Jalen Smith. But he couldn't play football. He just didn't have that feel for the game. And when I watch this kid, he's got to work on his hand placement and his footwork. But his feel for how to win is impressive. What I mean by that is it's not just about can you beat the guy off the edge. Because when you get to college, you're not going to do that all day. It's can you lean a guy out and then beat him inside. Do you understand that second hand move of how important that is? Yeah, it's one thing to use your first step, but can you then react to a guy getting his hands on you? When to go low, when to do these different things? And I see some of those natural instincts from a guy that overall is a pretty raw football player. So I think it made a lot of sense to go after a guy like that. I think that the other thing, too, is there's room for at least three ends in this class, because after 2019, Notre Dame loses Daylon Hayes, Khalid Kareem, Julian Aguara, and Jahmyr Jones, and Adeo Ogundeji is going to be going into his last year in 2020. So you only have two guys on the roster from the 2017 and 2018 classes, so this three-man class with Fosky, Nana, Osafa, Mensah, and Howard Cross is good, but you need another three-man class next year. So there's room for that third project kind of player with high upside, which is exactly what Adeo Ogundeji was for him. And we're seeing how that's starting to really turn out to be a really good pickup for Notre Dame.
Brian, just to go back to the 19 class for a second, as you look at the entire group, what is your favorite part of the class? It can be a player, a position group. How would you assess that particular question?
For me, it's the lines. And if I'm allowed to cheat and kind of put both lines into this conversation, big picture, I love the balance of the class. And this is the second year in a row Notre Dame's kind of hit all the right notes. They don't have any big holes in the class, no big misses. But really, if Notre Dame is going to win championships, they have to be able to compete with Bama and Clemson and Oklahoma and Ohio State in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And I've said this, if you could take Notre Dame's 2018 D-line and put it with their 2017 O-line, that's a darn good football team, right? And that's kind of what this recruiting class adds to the roster. Notre Dame, for the rival, started doing rankings, top 250 rankings back in 2006. As good as Notre Dame has recruited the offensive line, this is the first time in school history, again, in the rivals era, that they signed three offensive linemen in the top 125 of the country, right? First time. This is also the first time that Notre Dame has landed four four-star defensive linemen from rivals. First time since 2002. And this is also the first time since 24/7 Sports has been doing recruiting rankings that Notre Dame has five composite four-star defensive linemen. So they recruited the defensive line about as well as you can. And you know, for Mike Elson, I especially got to give a lot of nominations for, you know, top 25 recruits, which I did for Rivals.com, because he got an end from California, he got an end from New Jersey, he got two defensive linemen from Texas, and he got, in my opinion, the best player in Kentucky in Jacob Lacy. So he had to go all over the country to make it happen, but at the end of the day, you got three really good ends and two outstanding interior players, and I can't wait for Notre Dame fans to see what Hunter Spears can bring to the defense.
The Virginia Tech receiver, Eric Kuma, is supposed to visit Notre Dame this week, a potential grad transfer. What do you think about a grad transfer specifically at that position, wide receiver?
I'm all for it in theory. I don't necessarily love the idea of it right now with this particular player. I think Eric Coombe is a good football player. I think he would make the position better from an experience standpoint. I mean, we saw last year he can do some good things. But for me, one of the complaints that we had, when you talk to people at Notre Dame, we as Louisville, those trying to talk to people at Notre Dame, is, boy, you know, we have these really good pass catchers, but we don't have guys that can stretch the field, and we don't have guys that can do stuff after the catch. Well, he's not changing that because he is basically a Miles Boykin, Chase Claypool type of player. And you bring him in the fall, he's taking reps away from the young guys that need those reps to become those kind of players. He's taking reps away from Kevin Austin. He's taking reps away from a Miles Boykin, Michael Young. He's taking reps away from a Braden Lindsey just because you have one extra player. And so for me, my focus would be on develop the really talented young players you have, get your veterans, Chase Claypool and Chris Fink and Michael Young, to take their game to another level, and that's how you get better, because there are the tools in place right now at Notre Dame, physical tools for them to have an outstanding receiving corps next year. It's just up to Coach Long and Coach Alexander to get those players to take their game to the levels they're capable of, and that's what I would like to see the focus on.
Brian, let's wrap things up by allowing you to tell the folks what's happening at blueandgold.com, including with signing day part two coming up tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to be up very late tonight and tomorrow night finishing up. I'm going to have offensive grades for the offense and the defense tomorrow, both be premium articles. I have broken down and ranked all 21 players that are in the class, plus the Isaiah Foskey, who I expect to be in the class. So tomorrow my rankings, 1 to 22, will come out tomorrow. That will include analysis and film of each player. That will also be a premium story. And then on Thursday, I will have an article breaking down the 2020 needs, and then on Friday, which is my favorite piece to put together, is I break down the 2018 and 2019 classes together and grade those. But those are all premium stories, so you got to be a member of blueandgold.com to read them. If you go to blueandgold.com and you sign up, use promo code Irish60, you get 2 free months plus 4 free copies of our magazine, which will include our expanded edition recruiting magazine, which will obviously cover all these players and a lot of the different things that we talked about.
With all those stories, how do you not get blisters on your fingertips? My goodness.
You know, my wife bought me this nice thing that goes over my keyboard that makes it a little easier to type. And, you know, I play quarterback, so I have soft hands, so I am able to, you know, maneuver it that way. So it all works out well, my man.
Perfect, perfect. Brian, thanks for joining us as always. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. Brian Driscoll from blueandgold.com. Blue and Gold illustrated his thoughts on some Fighting Irish football topics. It's already 25 minutes in front of the top of the hour, and we will do part two of our Sports Beat memory number 4 tonight, which is the firing of Bob Knight, which occurred on March 14th, 2000. I'll let Sean offer a couple of thoughts, and then we'll play the Bob Knight song that aired on this program back in 2000. That's coming up next on WSBT. 21 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Irish basketball tomorrow night at Miami of Florida. 7 o'clock tips, 6:40 pregame here on 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader. Here on Sports Beat, Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat memory number 4 tonight, the firing of Bob Knight, presented by Lozier Corporation and DPM Events. Eric and I talked about this storyline for about a half an hour during the first portion of the program, since Eric was covering Indiana basketball from 84 to 96, offering some really interesting stories, including the SID getting left at Mackey Arena by Coach Knight.
See you later. Bus is pulling out, whether you know it or not.
Unbelievable. Well, it was almost stunning to watch this whole thing unfold after the Neil Reed video came out, the CNN Sports Illustrated piece. It was a lightning rod subject, eventually costing him his Indiana University basketball job. When you saw the video, you said,
ugh. I mean, there's no two ways around it. And it was interesting hearing some of Eric's perspective as someone who got to see a lot of this stuff up close and interact with him as well, because I think there's no doubt that there was another side to Bob Knight, a more human side. And I think there's a long list of his players who would tell you that. And unfortunately, I think what most of us, what stuck in our memories the most, unless you were a diehard Bob Knight IU supporter, the rest of us who weren't necessarily the images at the end of that video with Neil Reed, and having just watched that 30 for 30 here a couple of months ago, that's kind of what's more stuck, I think. And I mean, there's no doubt that Bob Knight is one of, if not the greatest coach, mm-hmm. college basketball coach of all time. I mean, he's still number three all time in Division I wins. And I mean, you can add to the fact that with all the championships and everything he did on the court, there was a high level placed on the educational side
sure.
as well. It's not like now where you're going out and getting one-and-done guys and all that. And there were never any scandals, really. I mean, there were incidents, but it was like the chair throw. It was, people seemed to find it a lot more entertaining. I remember being in school at Kansas, and I was in a class one day, and I think a guy said, "Yeah, this is the 10-year anniversary of the chair throw, Bob Knight," you know, something like that. But, you know, having grown up in Kansas, and I'm talking now more late 70s and into the 80s, you know, we had, before Larry Brown and then Roy Williams got there, I mean, it was Ted Owens, you know, at Kansas, and it was Jack Hartman at Kansas State. So there weren't these big, iconic coaches necessarily back then. But I think the ones that you knew who John Thompson, you knew Bob Knight, and you knew who Dean Smith was. Yeah. You know, those were like the national guys. And I remember Todd Jadlow. Do you remember Todd Jadlow on sure. the 87? He mm-hmm. was actually from my hometown, mm-hmm. Salina, oh, no kidding. Kansas. Yeah, he went to a junior college for a couple years. And then his last 2 years, he was at Indiana. So there was a little bit of a following there. But I remember before that 87 championship game, having the conversation with my mom. Like, she didn't like Bob Knight because of all the yelling and just everything else. But I didn't mind him necessarily because, again, growing up in that era, wrestling and football, played baseball too, but that was a little bit different. But those two sports, I mean, we were coached hard back then. You know, we had really vocal coaches and guys who would ride you back then. So that was just something that I kind of grew up with. You know, it's like when we went to the wrestling meets and we had tournaments, we had the kind of coach who, there could be 100 yelling people all over the place and six mats going, but you heard his voice all over the gym. So we were just used to that kind of thing. And then, you know, I heard you talk about the Army guys in the first hour, some of the callers that you had. Well, I remember, you know, again, like going back to that, being in basic training and the drill sergeants and all that, both physically and mentally, after all that, it wasn't that tough, I guess, because of that kind of preparation. And so, again, when you go back, the yelling, the emotion, all that stuff is one thing, but the line is drawn with the physical contact. For as much as we had those kind of coaches and the drill sergeants, none of them ever put a finger on anybody. No one was ever allowed to put a finger on anybody. So it's one thing, again, to be loud, to be emotional, to do all these different things, but that's where the line is drawn. And I know there's still a lot of people who don't see it that way, but that's where the line is. It's not a blurred line. And when you see that video, whether you want to call it a push or a choke or a punch or whatever, there's hard contact going on there. And to hear Neil Reed and some of these other players, it wasn't the first time. I mean, Pat Knight got it once in a game. Another player got a headbutt once in a game. We've seen it before. And again, it was interesting to hear some of Eric's stuff because he didn't sound like maybe as much of a total control freak back then, but it just seemed like the older he got and the more, like, that's where things really sort of seemed to separate at the end after the Neil Reed, because he thought he was still in control and he was going to control all the narrative and everything else. But in the end, he couldn't control it, and he took it a couple steps too far at the end.
When the video came out, there was no doubt in my mind he had to be fired. I still feel that way today. Having talked to Eric on and off the air about Bob Knight, I am as strong as ever in my belief I said the right thing back in 2000. There's just too much there. And yeah, that incident, if that was not a choke, my name is Uwe Blob. Come on. No, I agree. I know we all say allegedly. We have to say allegedly, but I don't know how you cannot.
Well, do we have to say allegedly just because of have to interpret whatever that contact was? I mean, there was hard contact to the throat. And by the way, God rest Neil Reed's soul. I mean, it's. I didn't even realize it until watching that 30 for 30. He died about 6.5 years ago in California, and he had been working with high school kids and coaching and doing that some of that kind of stuff. But unfortunately for him, he pretty much had to get as far away from Indiana as he could because of that whole thing. It was hard on him for the rest of his life.
And basically, most of the people at Indiana University that made the decision have passed away or moved on from the university yet. Mm-hmm. Bob will not reattach, unfortunately.
And that's what I don't get, why he can't separate, because he obviously held grudges against all those different people. They're all gone now. Why can't you just accept the invitation, come back?
It'd be a heck of a moment.
Yeah.
For IU fans.
Yep.
No doubt. All right, we'll take a 2-minute timeout. We'll play the Bob Knight song on WSBT.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
The Dan Patrick Show, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Spending a little more time on our sports beat memory tonight, number four, the firing of Bob Knight, March 14th of 2000. And once the firing had taken place, as I mentioned, it was a hot topic for weeks. Remember all the protests on campus? Before he got fired, Bob stood in front of the students that were supporting him. I mean, it was a bizarre time. And it was right before the NCAA tournament, too.
That's right.
Which made it even more of a bizarre story. But with all the things that happened in the Bob Knight era at Indiana University, 3 national championships, 76, 81, 87. The 76 team goes undefeated. 29 years, 662 victories with Indiana. With all those great things that happened, there were a lot of memorable quotes and a lot of memorable events that took place during that time. And with that in mind, I created back in 2000 the Bob Knight song. And I needed a song to help tell the story. So I went with an old Morris Albert song. I figured, you know what? This is just kind of the perfect touch. So let's relive some of the wild things that Bob Knight did. And you know what? Had a lot of funny things to say through the years. This is from 2000, the old Bob Knight song.
You say, how do you know? My answer to you is because I think I know Bob Knight better than anybody does. If you took the percentage of times that I have really gone overboard,
nothing more than feeling.
That's a pretty small percentage of all the circumstances I've been in.
Trying to forget my.
But if you can't start off excited in a game like this,
feelings of love,
you know, they better stick a rod up your ass and see if you're breathing.
Teardrops.
You got to keep in mind, I don't think the people that rank teams know what the hell they're talking about anyhow.
But I have no idea what zero tolerance is. There was never anything said.
Trying to forget my.
What if I get a technical foul in a game? Is that zero tolerance?
Feelings of love.
We haven't won for so damn long against anybody down here. I'd like to go home this summer having won something. Maybe we can throw a ball at the wastebasket or something.
For my life, I'm feeling.
I'm tired of losing to Purdue.
It's the greatest travesty I've ever seen.
Oh,
in basketball in 33 years as a college head coach.
Standing as far away as he can.
Feeling.
Bobby Knight just threw his chair clear across the free throw lane.
Feelings like I've never lost you.
You want to talk? What are you, an English major?
And feelings like I've never have you.
Not smiling out there. But let me see that great smile.
Again in my heart.
I went to that Big Ten meeting. Well, there are 7 of them that I didn't speak to.
Feeling.
Get a chance to speak to.
Oh, my life, I'll feel it.
And I'm tired of the bull that was made out of that.
I wish I'd never met you, girl.
Our team is too soft.
You'll never come again.
By
far to be a contender for the Big Ten Championship.
Have a nice day.
My wife has just fixed a delicious dinner here tonight.
Feelings like I've never lost you.
Turkey, she's an unbelievably good cook.
And feelings like I'll never have you.
In addition to being the nicest person that I know.
Again in my life.
Do you realize how many guys I've coached against that either played for me or coached for me? I mean, damn, I'd be an emotional wreck if I had emotions for every damn guy that I coach against has played or coached or whatever. I mean, hell, I've had Jimmy Cruz. And damn, Jimmy played for me, was a great player, and coached for me for about 8 years. I should have gone to Evansville. Damn, I should have been just emotionally drained for sake.
My time on earth is gone and my activities here are past. I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
The good old days, huh? Hopefully more.
That's not the song I was expecting.
I'm hoping Morris Albert would be okay with the use of that song for that particular tribute. Goodness.
That quote there at the end is probably the one that stands out the most from forever.
He had a lot of things to say through the years, to say the least. Our Sports Beat memory brought to you by Lozier, a great place to work, matching 401k contributions, DPM events. Visit dpmevents.com to get everything you need to make a successful corporate event. 5 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. Couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. You can save rapid fire for tomorrow. No homework for you.
Sounds good.
Sports Beat today brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Lechleitner Doors, sales and service at Lechleitner. They open all the right doors. Since we have just a minute left, I'm just going to play this. It's better with video, but I can set it up. This is an old Bob Knight show. George King, the old Purdue AD, apparently was upset with some of the things that had been said on the Bob Knight show. Bob had asked King to come on the Bob Knight show. He wouldn't do it. So on the next show, he had a special guest in the studio, and it was a guy standing with a donkey with a Purdue hat on. And this is how Bob described it.
Well, I was really disappointed, Chuck, that King chose not to come on the show because he had complained about our show and apparently didn't like it. And, you know, you and I and all the guys here have worked pretty hard to see that we have a good show. And I thought that maybe he could just add something to it by coming down. He seemed to think that we wanted to enter into debate. I said, if I want to enter into debate with somebody, I'd enter into somebody that really knew something about what he was talking. You know, I thought we'd just have George come down and talk about his career and coaching and so forth, and maybe would add something to our show. But I'll tell you what we got, though, Chuck. When I had a guy call me when he read that King wouldn't come on our TV show and told me that he had a guest for us that if we'd like to use him would probably express the same kinds of views and so forth and be very, very symbolic of a lot of the thinking at Purdue. And we're very fortunate to have him as our guest here on the show today, I think, Chuck.
What's his name?
Well, our guest is... His first name is Jack, Chuck, and I'll just let you figure out the last name.
Oh, my. And the donkey had a Purdue hat on, and it was just a priceless moment.
It would have been better if he had a toupee on.
Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.